I think the internet is becoming increasingly important in people's lives, and I think we need to have a full conversation about what is the right regulation, not whether it should be or shouldn't be.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg responds to Senator Sullivan's concerns on internet regulations. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Walker appointee to the Midwives Board with previous ties to Planned Parenthood is rejected.
It's really unfortunate because I think the entire conversation got off track for what midwifery care means.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The Alaska legislature rejected the appointment of a Palmer woman who is a former Planned Parenthood worker to a board that oversees midwives. Kenny Linden was the only one of 99 people appointed by Governor Walker who was rejected today. Opposition to Linden's appointment to the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives was centered on Planned Parenthood's role in providing abortions. Wasilla Republican Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard said during Linden's March 7th confirmation hearing that her constituents opposed the appointment. Linden was the Anchorage Regional Field Organizer for Planned Parenthood, focusing on advocacy for Medicaid expansion and access to birth control. She also worked on dating violence prevention and sexual health education. Linden says she left Planned Parenthood in July 2016 to have a baby. She says she's disappointed that the lawmakers who opposed her didn't reach out to her.
It's really unfortunate because I think the entire conversation got off track for what midwifery care means. And my experience and my previous employment with Planned Parenthood shows that I'm passionate about women's health care and women's access to health care. And I think that's essentially what a midwifery client is looking for.
Linden, who is again pregnant, says she applied to the board on the recommendation of her own midwife. The only person who addressed Linden's appointment during the joint legislative session today was North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson.
I just looked at the background, I listened to the hearing, and I just don't think it's a good fit for this board.
The vote was 32 to 28 against confirming Linden's appointment. The other appointees included Commissioner of Administration Leslie Rydell, Commissioner of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Mike Navarre, and Commissioner of Revenue Sheldon Fisher. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg took questions from nearly half the U.S. Senate at a hearing today. The CEO admits Facebook didn't do enough to protect users' privacy or prevent foreign interference in elections. He says he accepts responsibility and even welcomes the possibility of new federal regulation. But when it was Senator Dan Sullivan's turn to ask a question, Zuckerberg wasn't all that compliant. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Senator Sullivan's up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Zuckerberg.
Sullivan opened with a question honoring the success of Facebook.
Quite a story, right? Dorm room to the global behemoth that you guys are, only in America. Would you agree with that?
No, Zuckerberg did not agree.
Well, Senator, there are some very strong Chinese internet companies.
Right, but you're supposed to answer yes to this question. Okay, come on, I'm trying to help you, right? I mean, give me a break. You're in front of a bunch of senators. The answer is yes, okay? So thank you.
It was a light moment in a long hearing. But Sullivan went on to make a point about the dangers of regulation. Zuckerberg made clear he and the Alaska senator don't see it the same.
I'm not the type of person who thinks that all regulation is bad. So I think the internet is becoming increasingly important in people's lives, and I think we need to have a full conversation about what is the right regulation, not whether it should be or shouldn't be.
Zuckerberg may sound altruistic there, like he just wants what's best for society. But Sullivan questions whether Facebook would use its political power to push for regulations that cement its lead on competitors.
One of my biggest concerns about what you guys are doing is that the next Facebook, which we all want, the guy in the dorm room, we all want that to start it, that you are becoming so dominant that we're not able to have that next Facebook.
Zuckerberg says shutting out the little guy wouldn't be his approach to regulation, though he calls the concern valid. Sullivan only had a few minutes, but his name also came up when Democratic Senator Chris Coons asked Zuckerberg about malicious or phony Facebook pages. Just that morning, the Delaware senator said he found out someone had made a fake Facebook page for him. So Coons went online and found it.
And there's my picture with Senator Dan Sullivan's family. Same schools I went to, but a whole lot of Russian friends. Dan Sullivan's got a very attractive family, by the way.
No one disagreed. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Imprisoned Fairbanks militia leader Schaefer Cox has petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to review his conviction of conspiring to kill federal officials. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The petition centers on whether talk about murdering government officials by Schaefer Cox and members of the Alaska Peacemakers militia he commanded posed any real threat. Cox's federal public defender, Michael Filipovich, says any action to kill was premised on the U.S. government implementing Stalin-esque martial law, a highly unlikely scenario.
This case, as we said in our brief, it really concerns the outer limits of liability for conspiracy in the federal courts, particularly with respect to statutes involving conspiracy to murder federal officials or federal agents.
Filipovich says lower courts have made conflicting rulings on the issue. Also raised in the petition submitted to the Supreme Court last month is that no federal officials were specifically identified as murder targets. Cox was sentenced to 26 years in prison in 2012 for conspiracy and solicitation to murder federal officials and possession of illegal weapons. Last August, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals threw out the solicitation conviction and ordered Cox to be resentenced. That's on hold pending whether or not the Supreme Court agrees to hear his case. The 34-year-old Cox is serving his sentence at a federal prison in Illinois. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
President Donald Trump today nominated an Anchorage attorney to serve as a U.S. District Court judge in Alaska. Jonathan Katchen currently works on commercial and natural resource law at the firm Holland and Hart. He previously worked for the state of Alaska as senior counsel for Dan Sullivan, the current U.S. senator, when Sullivan was Alaska's Natural Resources Commissioner. Katchen is also a former law clerk of U.S. Court of Appeals Judge Marianne Trump Barry, sister of the current president. Katchen's nomination requires Senate confirmation. Still to come, the end of an era at KYUK as longtime broadcaster John Active steps away from the microphone.
He belongs to our community and to this radio station, and we're proud to have shared time with him.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
A year and a half after Hägglunds Aviation Flight 3153 flew into a mountain on its way to Togiak from Quinnahock, killing three people, the pilot, Timothy Klein, the co-pilot, Drew Welty, and passenger, Louis John. The National Transportation and Safety Board has released its report on the crash, along with sweeping recommendations. KYUK's Johanna Urich reports the board today recommended major changes in the way the Federal Aviation Administration oversees the state's numerous airlines operating small planes.
The investigation looked at why an experienced pilot who had flown the route many times flew his Cessna 208B caravan into a mountain outside of Togiak, killing all three on board. The National Transportation and Safety Board's investigators found no evidence that there was anything wrong with the pilot or the plane. They call this type of accident a controlled flight into terrain. It's usually caused by weather closing in, making it impossible for pilots to see where they're flying, and that appears to be what happened. Alaska has the highest rates of such accidents in the nation. NTSB Chairman Robert Sumwalt announced that Alaska needed to upgrade its aviation infrastructure. Everything from better weather reporting at tiny airstrips to communications and instrumentation so that pilots would have the capacity to fly in remote Alaska with instrument flight rules. Anything else, he said, would be, quote, biting around the fringes of the problem. Investigators found that this accident, like others of its kind, was the result of the pilot making a bad decision. How he came to make that decision? There was enough blame to go around. During the meeting, board members amended their report that was already strongly worded to make it more stringent. They pushed for improving Alaska aviation infrastructure to the level enjoyed by the lower 48 and to require flight data recorders on small planes, along with upgrading training to better reflect conditions in Alaska. At no point did the NTSB investigators indicate that Hagelin's pilots are being pressured to fly in unsafe conditions. They even complimented the company for voluntarily going further in their training than that required by the FAA. The board did indicate that the FAA's failure to provide adequate oversight for that training, along with other issues, played a large part in the conditions that have led to Alaska's high number of aviation accidents. I'm Johanna Urich.
The state's Senate spending plan cuts funding from the Alaska Marine Highway System, but not a lot. It shrinks the ferry system's fuel budget by about 2% of the total SOT. It also takes a larger share of overall operational costs out of what's called the Marine Highway Fund. That fund holds ticket and other revenues until they're needed. Senate Juneau Democratic Senator Dennis Egan is one of three members of the Senate Finance Transportation Subcommittee. He objected to the change.
It's not sustainable. We shouldn't be spending more out of that fund than we expect to get in ferry revenue. The way to spend more from the ferry fund is to get more people riding the ships.
The ferry system came close to shutting down this month because money had been removed from the Marine Highway Fund. That was replaced in a supplemental appropriations bill passed in March. The Senate is still working on its full operating budget bill for the fiscal year beginning in July. During an April 3rd meeting, Egan said he would try to restore cuts to Marine Highway Fund through an amendment. The University of Alaska on Monday announced they are extending the deadline for comment on a controversial timber sale near Haines and Klukwan, 10 more days until May 7th. The extension for comment on the proposed 13,000-acre timber sale on university lands comes after a well-attended special assembly meeting this past week, which resulted in requests for more time from the borough and Klukwan Tribal Council. Daisy Eaton reports from KHNS in Haines.
Haines Borough Assembly chambers were packed Tuesday evening for the special meeting to gather input on the largest proposed timber sale in the area in recent history. Many residents, including Tom Ely, said that clear-cutting and industrial-scale logging would harm their tourism businesses.
The beauty of the Chilkat Valley is why I live here and what brings tourists here. I've had a tourism business for 30 years. We run tours on the Haines Highway. And one of these areas is right along the highway up in there, Upper Valley there.
Ely said the borough should look into a land exchange with the university or a buyout of the timber rights. Others, like Haines Torme, said logging could bring much-needed jobs to the region and also be a part of the Haines tourism economy.
In Ketchikan, one of the main tourist attractions is the Lumberjack Show. Tourists do not flee from timber and clear cutting. They're interested in it. It is what makes Alaska, Alaska. We mine, we fish, and we log.
Tony Strong Clinkett from Klukwan said his community is very concerned that the proposed timber sale would worsen the situation of Chilkat River King and sockeye salmon, traditional foods for his people, and damage the overall ecology of the area.
How often do we have to lose everything we have for a little bit of money, for a little bit of job, for a few people? We can't continue to do that. I think we have to figure out some way to make sure that we don't lose all these resources, not just the timber, but all of the value that comes with that, the value that comes with the inherent ecology.
Klekwan Tribal Council President Kimberly Strong sent a note, which was read aloud at the meeting, informing the borough that Klekwan was also requesting an extension of the comment period. Strong wrote that Klekwan objects to the sale due to lack of information. Logging began in Haines in the 1800s and grew in the 1900s, with mills operating along the waterfront into the mid-20th century. While the last large mill closed here in the early 80s, small-scale lumber operations continue to this day, but the local economy now relies mostly on tourism and fishing. University of Alaska is a land-grant university, which means that the federal government gave the state land to benefit the university. The acreage was originally selected by the state in 1954, prior to statehood and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and was eventually deeded to the University of Alaska in the 80s. On March 28, the university announced it was entering into a negotiated timber sale on 13,400 acres of that land scattered throughout the borough. The 10-year deal is estimated to produce 150 million board feet. It comes on the heels of the university's attempted 400-acre timber sale on the Chilkat Peninsula. No bids were received on that controversial proposal. UA says it will develop that land for a residential subdivision. The most common refrain at Tuesday's meeting was that Haines residents need more information about the university's plans. Some felt the university was fast-tracking the project. University of Alaska President Jim Johnson recently said the university system cannot withstand continued budget cuts. The university's annual budget declined by more than $60 million since 2014. At Tuesday's meeting, Kathleen Menke said she was alarmed by the lack of process.
For the university to say that they're coming here on the 26th, to give us information after the deadline for public comment is just not adequate public process.
The university had set the date of April 19th for public comment to be received and has now extended it until after a meeting with the Alaska Department of Forestry, with representatives of the university and the public in Haines on April 26th. University officials say they recognize that extending the deadline for comments until after the scheduled open house meeting will allow more opportunity for the public to make informed comments on the project. At Tuesday's meeting, John Norton said he worries about the university's plan to award a contract so quickly.
I'm not against the idea of logging, but what raised some level of concern for me was that idea of when I read that they were going to award the contract for this cut in July.
The university plans to award a contract for the timber sale by the end of July. In Haines, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Curious about your alcohol habits or those of someone you care about? Find a free and confidential alcohol screening at recoveralaska.org or call 211 today. This Alcohol Awareness Month, Recover Alaska reminds us that together we are stronger than alcohol addiction. Recover Alaska is a trusted source for alcohol research and resources, including an index of local available treatment options. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska, proud to support Alaska Public Media.
It's the end of an important part of programming in the KYUK family serving the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Yupik storyteller, host, and translator John Active has retired. KYUK's Christine Trudeau brings us this story from Bethel of Active's last day at the station on March 30th.
John Active, the legendary Yupik storyteller, has retired from KYUK. Active was the host of Ketfahlugu, a talk show hosted in the Yupik language and talk line.
Hello. Hello. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Talk Line, March 30th.
Express yourself.
Okay.
Good Friday. Good morning.
Good morning. John's in a mood today because today is John's last talk line.
Thank God. Zippity doo dah, zippity ay. Oh, what a wonderful day.
So you feel...
It's my last day here at KYK. Zippity doo dah, zippity ay. Express yourself.
Last week, John Active co-hosted Talkline with KYUK's own Diane McCachran for his last show. The show will continue with McCachran and Peter Atchak.
I think it's going to be farewell. This is it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's farewell.
You are so fun to host with. I mean, I really enjoy it. We have a good time.
Following the show, KYUK hosted a potlatch in Active's honor. Active has been with KYUK since the beginning in 1971. KYUK is the longest-running Alaska Native Native American-owned and operated radio station throughout the United States, and John has been there all along the way, translating Yupik and English news, hosting shows like Ketfahlugu and Talkline, and filling countless roles at KYUK for decades. Bethel City Council member Mark Springer pointed out that the station was a pioneer in bringing bilingual content to public broadcasting nationwide. And Springer says that leadership has continued.
I think he's been a real inspiration to Alaska Natives and to Native Americans because he's been recognized nationally for his work.
He belongs to our community and to this radio station, and we're proud to have shared time with him and space with him and the words that he passes on to our people.
KYUK's Peter Atchak.
We're just fortunate to have had Akum here amongst us and to share what God had gifted him with.
KYUK's Dean Swope.
So I guess this meal here is to honor John and his retirement, but I don't know, somewhere in the back of my head I think, you're gonna be showing up. We'll see ya.
It's hard to imagine him not being at the station. Active has retired before from KYUK and come back. Swope pointed out that John Active's unique voice has been a part of what has tied the Yupik culture and everyone in the YK Delta together. John didn't find it easy to accept all the praise.
Yupik culture teaches us that we're not supposed to put ourselves up. And so when people say something good of what I did, it kind of makes me embarrassed and bashful. But that's a Yupik way.
Active said he's glad he was raised by his elders, his grandmother and grandfather, and thankful for whatever ability he has had to pass down these ways.
Everything that I do today and on the radio, try to make people laugh, make them comfortable, is I'm trying to pass on what the elders taught to me by my actions, what I learned from them. And so that's just me today. I'm kind of short-tempered, but of course, you know, my Yupik name is Akumak, which means person who likes to sit around, and my English surname is Active, so there's always a conflict. But I'm sure glad that you came and these people came. I invited a bunch of elders, but you know, elders are short-memoried, and they probably forgot. But I always say, the less people when you're going to eat, the more to eat ourselves. Kuyana, Dean, let's start.
But who knows? It could be we'll see another potlatch the next time he retires. From all of us at KYUK, Kuyana and Chimakwets, John, thank you. In Bethel, I'm Christine Trudeau.
What makes a healthy community? What helps young people in a village thrive? For the next few weeks, Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk will be exploring what makes Alaska communities resilient. For the first story, Anne Hillman traveled to Inuitak in the Northwest Arctic to learn from the kids who know best.
High school junior Esther Barger bends her knees and vaults off the bare gym floor onto a 2-foot-tall wooden box. Her teammates sprint by and run through short obstacle courses. No chatter, no complaining, just intensive focus. Esther grimaces as she completes the drills, but she says she likes it.
It's only fun to me because I get to challenge myself and I get to improve.
And she's not just improving her athletic abilities. Esther says being on the team has helped her overcome her shyness with teammates and everyone else.
I'm not very social, but since we get to know each other, it helps me talk more and it helps outside of the sport too.
She says community members show up to support the kids and encourage them to do well at school, and not just during basketball games, which are very popular. Inuitak stands out as a healthy village. People who live there know it, and so do researchers who study things like resilience. Elders and adults, like Thurston Boots, are in the school all the time. Thurston drops off his granddaughter, then just sits in the entry for over an hour, watching and chatting. every morning.
Oh, I like to be around the kids too. You know, we got lots of kids out here. And just make sure they're, you know, they have good discipline for the teachers.
Thurston says discipline, respect, and sharing are key values in the village. Dozens of people repeated the same sentiment. It's the kind of place where if someone has extra food from dinner or a hunt to share, they announce it over the VHF radio. Thurston says his elders taught him those values, so he teaches the young people.
Everybody work together, and when somebody needs something, we pass it on. Everybody here in this community, they're all just like one big family. They all share everything, every time. We learn from our grandfather and our grandmothers. They're the ones that show us how to do it.
On the surface, it seems like these things are just typical parts of a pleasant community. Kids are involved with sports. Adults play active roles in their lives. But really, it's these little things that matter. Researchers say it's these connections that create a safe and supportive environment that allows young people to take risks and mature in healthy ways. They learn their strengths, understand their roles in the community, and figure out who they are. NOAA-TECH is not perfect. Brianna Kirk will tell you that. She grew up in the village, left for college, then recently came back to work as the school counselor. She says she can tell which kids come from families that participate in village life and in subsistence activities, and which kids don't.
We do lack a lot of things. Like, I deal with kids that sometimes have home issues that they bring into the school, and it affects their ability to perform in the classroom. It affects their friendships. There's so many stressors and things that affect students, and all the way from kindergarten to high school.
Brianna was in middle school when about 10 years ago, a community member died by suicide. She says she still remembers how that felt, and it shapes her work today.
It's taught us a lot about how much one life being taken from us can affect everybody. I think with someone like myself and the other staff in the school that were here when it happened, like, we always have it at the back of our head, and we want to keep our students safe as much as possible.
That means helping everyone know what signs to look for, how to jump in when someone is struggling, how to keep kids engaged. For Esther, from the basketball team, engagement goes well beyond the court. Every year she goes fishing and caribou hunting with her family, but her favorite thing to do is berry picking.
I like to race my mom because she's been berry picking a lot more than me, so I'm trying, very competitive.
She says they fill their freezers and build their relationships all at the same time. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Johanna Urick and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Daisha Eaton in Haines, and Christine Trudeau in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, Public Media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.